Hello, I'm Adam, and welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench, a gardening podcast where you'll hear tales and stories from the most interesting and different people from the world of both indoor and outdoor gardening. This episode is sponsored by the wonderful people at PlantGrow, producers of award-winning organic fertilisers made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden, and even greater for the planet. And don't forget, if you use the code POTTINGBENCH on plantgrow.co.uk, you'll get 10% off your order. Before we get into this week's episode, I'd like to ask, if you listen to this podcast and enjoy it, then please consider rating and leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. It's easy to do, takes a few minutes of your time, but it helps this podcast get into the ears of more like-minded planty people. This episode features a conversation with garden designer and presenter Danny Clark, otherwise known as the Black Gardener. Danny is perhaps best known as part of the team on Alan Titchmarsh's Love Your Garden, as well as appearances on This Morning and Channel 5's Filthy Garden SOS. We talk here about how all of this began, including how Danny's mentor helped him to inspire his love of being connected with nature. Enjoy. So, for anyone who is not familiar with you right now, who are you and what is it that you do?
Well, I'm Danny Clark. I'm a garden designer, TV presenter, and self-confessed friend of the earth.
Oh, I like that. I like that. What makes you a friend of the earth? What is it? How do you become a friend of the earth?
I don't know. I just think I like everything nature. And yeah. I'm a big tree hugger. When I see a tree, I feel I need to go and just feel it and touch it, give it a bit of love. And in return, it gives me some back. So, yeah. I'm very connected to it. I think I am anyway, very connected to nature and the outside world. I think we are. We all came from the same speck of dust. That's my belief. Mm. You know, whatever you see around you, you take the components of a motor car, for example. Everything from that motor car originated from the soil. And the same with us. We came from soil. They say that we share some like 40% of our DNA with plants.
Yeah.
That says it all. So we're all interconnected. We're connected to nature. Even the motor car is connected to nature.
It's true. You don't think about it like that. And I think what you said about the soil thing, I can't remember it now. I'm gonna have to check this, but there's something like we're closer to soil than we are to, I don't know, something else that we naturally think we're closer to, which I think is incredible, you know?
We'll go back to it, don't we?
Mm.
We came from it, we end up back in the soil. And that's why that soil is so precious. That really is our life force.
Yeah.
Everything emanates from that. And we should be more respectful of it. I think we take it too much for granted.
100%.
There's a saying, actually, and I love it, and I use it on my website. We come from the earth, we return to the earth, and in between we have gardens. How's that?
Love it. Absolutely love it. It's true, though. That's just the matter of the fact, is that it is absolutely true. Is this something that you envisioned doing from a young age, or did you have a previous life before gardening? What got you to this?
Well, it's interesting because horticulture would not have been on my radar when I was young. I mean, I think the reason I got to it is because I was infused with nature from a young child. So subconsciously, really. I mean, I can remember my father, for example, saying to me, I mean, I come from, my father was in the army. So my childhood was very transient, traveling from one country to another, never been in one place for very long, sometimes as short as 2 months, but never longer than two and a half years. Always on the move. And I just remember always being outside as a child, wherever we were. I can remember when we lived in Hampshire for a couple of years. I think I was around about the age of 9 at primary school. I remember my friends knocking on the door virtually every Saturday morning if I wasn't playing football for the school football team. If I was playing football for the school football team, then I'd be off for sort of half the day doing that. But if I wasn't, my mates would be knocking on the door and we with their bicycles, and we just ride off into fields and into the woods and make dens and climb trees. And we'd get into what was called good trouble, you know, maybe climb a wall and nick a few apples, you know. It's all fun, but we're always outside.
Yeah.
If I wasn't outside, my dad would make me go outside, you know. He'd say, go in a garden and find me a four-leaf clover. And do you know what? I'm still looking for it.
Still looking. Still looking.
I think that was like a subconscious thing that happened. I enjoyed being out, you know, feeling the wind on my face, the heat of the sun, you know, the way the rain kind of, you know, glistened, all those things, you know, you sort of enjoy. Because when you, when you're a child, you're very kind of open-eyed, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're very conscious, more conscious of things. It dulls as you get older, I think.
I think so.
Other things come into play.
Yeah.
As a child, you're kind of in wonderment of the world that's around you, especially the natural world. You know, when you see a bird flying, or, you know, or you might see a mouse or a hedgehog or something. It's like, wow, come and look at this. And you get all really excited. And I think what happened then is when I got to an age where I owned my own property and I had my own garden, and obviously I had to look after it. Otherwise, it would get overgrown and the neighbours would start complaining or whatever. I didn't have a plant from a weed, but I'd go outside and I'd tidy it up. And I found myself kind of enjoying it. And I think the reason being is that it would take me back. If I smelt a rose or saw clover, it would take me back to the rose. It might be a scented one, and it take me back to a period in my life. I could be in a certain part of England where we had that rose in our garden at the time. It could be clover, and I remember what my dad would say to me. So when you go back and you revisit your past, revisit your childhood, it gives you a sense of comfort, doesn't it? And because I think with many of us, they are happy years, and they were certainly for me. And before I knew it, my love for nature got reinvigorated. And outside was a place I wanted to be. That's where I felt most comfortable. And then it just kind of went from there, really. So, yeah, went from there. So my journey into gardening as a professional, I mean, I was in sales for many, many years. Initially quite successful and then less successful. Things weren't going so well, and I just got this timely call from a lady called Jo Bryant, and she'd heard a rumor that I enjoyed gardening and being close to nature, and wondered if I'd be interested in helping her out in her space, because she had failing health and she needed a bit of muscle, shall we say. And I went to visit her, and the most amazing lady. I mean, she had one of these all year round tans.
Yeah.
Very physical. You know, when she greets you, be Danny, great to see you. Everything was really over the top.
Yeah.
And I agreed to work for her one day a week. And what she didn't know about gardening, you can put on the back of a postage stamp.
Right.
She basically reawakened my interest. Really reawakened my interest. And showed me how to look at the world in a certain way. So I worked for about one day a week. Pay was absolute rubbish, but I just so much from her.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, she had 2 acres of land, steam garden, because she's always out in it. House, big house,
yeah,
around it. It was falling down, but she didn't care about that. It's a garden that meant everything to her.
To her, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing she would do, if I arrived to do some work and it was pouring down rain, it was windy, it was cold, She could see by my body language, I wanted to just to say, Danny, don't worry about working today. Just turn around, go home, come back when it's nice and warm and sunny and it's, you know, not raining.
Yeah.
But she turned on his head and she'd go, Danny, great to see you. And she'd say something like, doesn't that wind feel wonderful on your face?
Oh, right.
What a dramatic day. Look at that sky. What a wonderful shade of grey. Look at those raindrops on that lady's mantle. Doesn't it look fabulous? And that's the way it should be.
Oh, so that's where you... So that enthusiasm that you were talking about at the start, about the way you look at the rain and the way the wind feels on your face... A lot of that is coming from her as well, isn't it?
She was my mentor. So I was very, very lucky. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be talking to you now without a shadow of a doubt. Because she is the person that kind of... I didn't know that at the time. Obviously, it's only when I look back. And I must tell you a story, actually. And remind me to tell you the story about Chelsea.
Okay.
That set me on my way.
So how long ago was that?
Oh, that was that would have been 25 years ago.
Right, okay.
So basically, I'd work for her one day a week, and I still had my sales job going on as well, because that was my main job. So 4 days a week to myself, 1 day a week working for her. But people would then approach me and ask me to do their gardens. So I got to a point where I couldn't do two. I either had to, you know, stay where I was in sales and maybe be a part-time gardener, or go full hog and, you know, make a career out of horticulture. Mm. And for me, it's a no-brainer. It had to be the outside world. And so I made that. It wasn't a jump. It seems like a jump, but it wasn't really the obvious thing to do.
Yeah.
I just carried on and enrolled at a local horticultural college, did a year's design course. So I was maintaining and doing a bit of garden design at the same time. And then I got into TV, and then I just got so much work from TV that I just do design.
What was your first TV role? Was it The Instant Gardener?
The Instant Gardener was my first TV role. So there's a bit of a story there. Because
I'm making a list of these stories to make sure that we come back to them all.
I might need more than half an hour.
Yeah, that's fine.
People tell me, you know, we were talking earlier about me breaking out of sweat when we look at technology.
Yeah.
And I'd resisted, you know, technology for many, many years. You know, the idea of having an online presence was just very foreign to me.
Mm.
I did have a website, which was literally a few lines, which was Martin Suzy Garden Design.
Yeah.
With a picture of me, my smiley face, holding a shovel or something. Yeah. And that was, you know, address, phone number. And it wasn't doing anything for me. People kept saying to me for ages, Danny, you need an online presence. This is where people are going these days.
Mm.
You need to sort that out, because people don't go into Yellow Pages if they want a gardener or a plumber or whatever. They don't look at leaflets that pop through the door. They go online. So you need to stand out from the rest. So I resisted it. And then, you know, I thought, well, you know, I think I will back up my ideas, because I'm making a career of this. So I've got to embrace technology as much as I can. So I remember going on this course in Erith, which it wasn't a million miles from where I used to live. It was a government-run thing.
Mm.
Basically, they would look at your online presence and give you tips on how you can improve it.
Right, okay.
So I went along with my then partner, my ex-partner, and we sat in this room along with other people, and the guy who was taking the course was going around to each person individually and finding out a bit about them.
Right.
And when he got to me, he asked me, what's so remarkable about your business name, which was at the time Branton Suzy Garden Design.
Right.
It's an amalgamation of my middle name, which is Branton, his middle name, which is Suzy.
Right.
So it was actually Suzy Barrington, but my brother kept the idea of switching them around because it sounds more sort of poncy, if you like. Let's go for that. And I said, well, I don't know, really. I said, it's not that great, is it? But I said to him, I've had this idea, and I don't know whether I should do it or not. And he said, what's that? I said, calling myself the Black Gardener.
Right.
And he looked at me, and you could hear a pin drop. I thought, what have I said? And he looked at me and he said, do you know what? That is a stroke of genius.
Oh, that's not how I thought you were going to go. I thought you were going to say that he was going to say, don't go with that.
No.
Oh, amazing.
He said, that is wonderful. He said, there's a serious message behind it, in that there aren't many diverse people in horticulture, especially at the top end.
Mm.
Said, it's memorable, which is great. No one's ever forget that name. And it's tongue in cheek. He said, if you get nothing else out today, that's what you've got to do.
Yeah.
You go and you change your name to the Black Gardener. It's positive. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And it changed my life.
Absolutely. So once you'd made that kind of name change, as it were, what happened after that?
Well, people would sort of, I'd had it on the back of my car. I had a Land Rover Defender in those days, and had it sort of inscribed on the back wheel of the Black Garden. And people took me, a great message, mate. You know, that's fantastic. Good on you. I'll get negativity. You know, people say, you can't call yourself the Black Gardener. And I say, why? They say, well, you know, Alan Teach Marsh can call himself the White Gardener. And it would and I'd in the nicest possible way try and win them round. And most people say, yeah, you're right, you know, it's silly. Black is seen as negative. Mm. And it's in our heads. It's not racist at all. It's all in our heads, because it's been perceived for hundreds of years as being something that's not good. Like, black is always like the black cat, for example, the black look, or, you know, it's always perceived that way. And I then got, it was literally about 3 months after I changed the name. So I got a website all set up and everything. So I'm all ready to go. It's on the back of the car.
Yeah.
I've even got T-shirts, Black Gardener, because I'm really And about 3 months later, my email goes ping. And there's a heading on it, BBC 12 Yard or something, production company. And basically said, we've got this gardening TV series commissioned. And I honestly thought it was a joke. I really did. This is I nearly deleted the email because I thought it was someone trying to scam me for money, which I haven't got. And he said, got this BBC TV gardening series commissioned. Would you be interested in doing a screen test to be its be a presenter? And I've got a sister who's an agent, and I phoned Jenny up and I said, Jenny, this has come through, but I think it's a wind up. She said, don't worry about it. I'll look into it. See if it's changed. She phoned me about 20 minutes later. She said, this is genuine. She said, she said, they're looking for the production company, 12 Yard, a part of ITV, are looking for a black person because they want to freshen up the TV gardening industry, present their show. And how they found me, so on the development, Google Black Gardeners, and your website came up. And
that was a stroke of luck that you changed that.
Yeah, it was just a stroke of luck. I changed it. And I did the screen test, and it went well. They said they let me know, and blah, blah, blah. And then a few days later, because they were in a hurry to find someone, because they'd got it commissioned, and they wanted it all out on the telly. I mean, this was the February, and they wanted it out on the telly by the June, July time.
Oh, my God, wow.
Really short time span. And I got a call later to say, look, you know, we're happy with the screen test, but we'd like to do a pilot, which I obviously agreed to. And then a couple of days later, I got a call to say, forget the pilot. Well, that short's going to work. Let's go straight to series.
Bloody hell.
It's when then my feet didn't touch the ground.
What year was that that was out?
That was 2015.
2015. So then since then, TV-wise, you've done all sorts, haven't you, since then?
I've done, well, obviously The Instant Gardener. I've done Filthy Garden SOS with Dermot Gavin. Mm. And now with the Lovely Garden team with Alan Titchmarsh. Mm. So it's been, a bit of a journey. And there's other exciting things happening as well. I mean, I've done Chelsea Flower Show.
I did,
which was tremendous. I did the one show at Buckingham Palace, which was, you know, live, which I'd never done before, live TV. And I only knew about that gig the night before. I'm literally sitting here, like, watching a telly, and my mobile goes, 9 o'clock, and the mobile goes, and I answered it. And it's basically someone asking if I'd do the one show on behalf of the Queen's Cream Canopy, because I'm an ambassador for them.
Yeah.
And I obviously had to say, at Buckingham Palace, live, I had to say yes. I mean,
of course,
And I put the phone down. I thought, what the hell are you doing? Why did you answer the phone? Because now I'm actually pooing myself, you know? And I was up all night, just really, really nervous, really, really worried.
I bet.
But I did it and it was fine.
What a memory, though, to have that. I mean, and Chelsea as well. You mentioned Chelsea. It was my first visit to Chelsea last year, and your garden with Tayshan was just, it was Hands Off Mangrove, it was called, wasn't it?
Mangrove, yeah.
So what was the, because there was you know, there's clearly, there was a message behind that, and it was on behalf of Grotono.
So Grotono was founded by Tayshan Hayden Smith, and I'm basically his co-founder. So he thought the idea, and he asked right at the beginning if I'd like to join him as a director. To which I said, after a nanosecond, I said yes. Now, I met Tayshan in the wake of the Grenfell fire in 2017. So, because I had a bit of a profile by then, because of the Instant Gardener, one or two other bits and pieces I've done on TV. You know, like many people, I was horrified by what happened. And I contacted the Royal Birth Council and Chelsea, see if I could help in any way. And basically, they put me in touch with Tayshan, who at the age, who at the time was 19, basically gardening without permission, a guerrilla gardener. And what drew him to that, he knew people in the fire who perished. And as a way of dealing with it, he would just find a community space, pick up syringes and litter, and find some fading flowers from a local nursery and just appreciate the place as best he could.
Yeah.
And he found he got a great deal of solace from that. He wanted to take the benefits that he got out of it to a bigger audience. And he asked if I'd help him. So that's how that partnership started. I mean, he's the most amazing guy. I mean, we've known each other now for about six years. And we've had this amazing journey. One of the stop-off points, obviously, is Chelsea Flower Show. And
great garden. Absolutely fantastic. I think it absolutely stood out. I mean, Chelsea last year was phenomenal, but I think it just stood out. And this is a memory of mine of Chelsea, and your garden was so busy. Every moment that I came past, there were crowds, you know, three or four deep, and there was no way of kind of getting right close to it. But I fortunately kind of stood there. I didn't get a chance to talk to you then, but I stood there and listened to you talk to people. And you were there the day that I went. You were there all day. I don't think you went from that garden at all. And you were just talking constantly and listening, and the conversations you were having were just amazing. And it's clearly an idea and clearly a concept and a garden that really brought people together at Chelsea, didn't it?
I think it did. It did bring a lot of people together. And it was great because, you know, we've obviously, Treasure and I are diverse. You don't see many people look like us showing gardens at Chelsea. So it was, and the message also was very strong in that it was a garden of bringing people together and a garden of resilience. Yeah. And a garden of hope, you yeah. know, and a garden of love, you know. I mean, some people one or two people viewed it negatively, but it wasn't about that at all. They actually misunderstood the message. And, you know, because we're basically paying homage to the West Indians who came to this country yeah. in the early 50s and telling the story through a restaurant called The Mangrove, yeah. which was owned by a guy called Frank Critchlow in the late 60s, 70s, / 80s. That was brutalized by the police. They would go out, so within the restaurant, I mean, basically it was a peaceful haven. It had all very diverse, all kinds of people met there. I mean, Muhammad Ali visited the restaurant, for example, Jimi Hendrix, Bob Marley, very, very famous people, well-known, connected people went to that restaurant. And the police just, for some reason, had it in for the people who frequented it. And there was a peaceful protest against the police because of their behavior, and nine people within the restaurant who frequented the restaurant got arrested. They became known as the Mangrove Nine. They were taken to court for inciting a riot, which they wasn't true, but they defended themselves and won a landmark victory, and that had reverberations right through the yeah. judicial system. So basically the judicial system actually pointed to the police and said, yes, you are racist, which had never happened before because they'd always been protected. And they had to change their practices, and we're feeling the benefits of it now. So we were telling the story through that garden. We were just so proud to have had the opportunity to do that.
Just, it constantly will amaze me, the stories and the, I suppose the stories that you can tell of people through a garden. It's just incredible, isn't it?
You can. And you know, that garden actually kind of changed its, changed its message isn't the right word, but actually changed what it was going to be. So it was going to be, because it's gone into a community space not far from where the Mangrove restaurant used to be. Certainly has a blue plaque on it now.
Right.
And it's going into a space called Tavistock Square, right. which stone's throw. We should have it installed in the next 3 or 4 months. So when we had it at Chelsea, it was basically just going to be a story, and then taking it to the idea was that when it goes to Towers and Square, it's going to be a garden that people will just go and visit and enjoy. Mm. But it's now become a memorial garden. The relatives of the Mangrove Nine, only two of which are still alive, by example, the two mm-hmm. women. So there were nine people, as you know, seven of which were men, who have all gone now. Two women are alive, Anthea and Barbara. And but obviously the relatives are still around. And the knock-on effect that what happened in to the restaurant, to the owner and the people that frequented it, the knock-on effect was enormous. Health issues, that kind of thing. Because although they won this landmark victory, the brutality continued way after. Forced to close in the 80s. And this is a place where these people can go and meet yeah. and reflect. They've actually got a focus point. So it's changed from a garden that people, just a garden, if you like, with yeah. this meadow, a memorial space.
Yeah, how wonderful that it's been able to do that.
Which is absolutely amazing, yeah.
Really is. So that's, I mean, what a debut at Chelsea. That's your first First Chelsea
garden. Ever even exhibited at a garden fete.
Wow. Bloody this hell, what a way to start.
Straight into the deep end. We did have help. It was a team effort because there's no way we could have done that on our own. You know, we enlisted the help of some people who were only too happy to give us their support. Like, I don't know if you heard of Cleve West, for example.
Yeah.
He helped us a lot. He was there in the background.
Amazing.
At the sounding board. And he was absolutely fantastic. What a gent. And to be fair, we couldn't really have done it without him. He was so generous with his time.
Well, what does that mean for the future for you? Can we see another Chelsea garden maybe one day? Have you got? I imagine you've got lots of ideas bubbling around.
We've got something amazing to be doing next year through Grosvenor, and I think I can divulge it because I think it's quite out there. We're going to be building a Chelsea flower show garden, but not on the site. It's going to be in the community, strange community.
Oh, amazing!
So, we're working on that at the moment.
For the time of Chelsea, though?
For the time of Chelsea. It won't be a judged garden. I don't know. It'll probably have a title, community garden or feature garden or whatever. Really? I don't know. And it won't be judged. But it'll be a present, let's say, from the RHS to the community. So basically, the RHS are using Grow to Know as a stepping stone to facilitate nice gardens for them, hand over to the wider public.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. I can't wait to see that, especially if it's happening at the same time as Chelsea. What a real kind of launch for it. Yeah.
It's never been done before.
Yeah.
Very first time. And we all know that Chelsea is quite exclusive. Mm. It's only for the few.
Mm.
Generally, you know, you've got to have a few bob to just be able to afford to get in there. And then once you're in, everything's extremely expensive. You don't want to be a hamburger there because, you know, you'd probably be cheaper at the Ritz.
I took my packed lunch last year. Not ashamed to admit that.
Yeah, don't be ashamed to admit it, I tell you. Yeah, exactly. So I think Chelsea realised this and they need to change. Because they have to, because we've got a change of demographic in this country.
100%.
And if they don't move along with the times, they in the future, they won't exist. So, and to their credit, they know that they've got to move forward.
Yeah.
And we are the ideal people to help them to do that. Because we're talking about Chelsea.
Yeah,
so this might be a great opportunity for me to sort of put this into our little conversation. So Joe was my mentor, who gave me so much. I worked for 3 years until her death. But in that time, I was able to build up my garden maintenance practitioner business and then move on to garden design and then on and so forth. So now I'm at Chelsea Flower Show this year. Joe's been gone something like 21 years. I always think about it. Whenever I put a plant in the garden, I think to myself, what would Joe do here? How would she plant it? What would she say about it? Or, you know, I'd say, I'd have a little, I don't know, something going on in my head about how do I shape this flower bed?
Yeah.
What advice would Joe give me? So she's always in the back of my, you know, in there talking to me. And I'm at Chelsea being interviewed at the side of the garden. I can't remember what radio station it was. And there's a presenter with his microphone and I'm talking to him. And as I'm really concentrating. So I'm not, it's loads of people around, but I'm just concentrating on speaking to this guy because it's live radio and I don't want to do any missteps because you never know. I might get arrested and end up, you know, ending up for somebody to pay some bail money to get me out. So at the clink, as I'm talking to this guy, I was aware of this lady just standing to the right of me and slightly behind. But I didn't look round. And I'm telling the presenter this story about Joe, how much she meant to me and how she influenced me. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. And I'm going on and telling the story. And at the end of the interview, he said, thank you very much. I said, thank you. I turned around and lo and behold, standing next to me, and she heard every word that I said, was Joe's daughter, Jojo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I tell you what, I just got really emotional, as you can imagine.
Oh, I bet.
I was actually in floods of tears. I'm even getting emotional telling you about this now. And we had a hug.
Oh, God. What fortuitous timing, though, that?
Oh, bizarre. It was bizarre. We had a hug, and she said, because she was a remarkable woman in many ways. And then Jojo just disappeared off into distance. I didn't see her again.
Gosh, what a roller coaster of a story that was.
My horticultural world had turned a full circle. So from meeting Joe, my mentor, the lady, didn't know much about gardening. You know, it was all instinctive as far as I was concerned, who gave me so much, you know, the way I look at the world, the natural world, gardening, you know, how to move around a space and make it look good, et cetera, et cetera. And then be at the top echelons of the horticultural world,
yeah,
and be there and talk about Joe freely and her daughter standing next to me, unawares, and you know, I was totally unaware of it. It was just, amazing. You know, it's almost like she was sent to
that moment
to give me her seal of approval. And oh, Joe literally just disappeared, melted away into the crowd.
That is absolutely incredible.
It's quite chilling, isn't it?
It is. God, I have got a right chill at my back. Just yeah.
No, it's I tell you what, I could tell you so many things that you just wouldn't, you know. It's almost like, you know, there's people up there moving chess pieces and saying, oh, let's take Danny in this direction and see what happens there. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was a bit of fun, was it? Let's move him to the right and see. You mean the coincidences, really? Yeah. I mean, I'm not a religious person. I am spiritual. But it does make me wonder sometimes, you know, is there a bit more going on?
100%. Totally agree.
Realize, because so many coincidences, especially with my route into horticulture, you know, and the things that happened to me in the last few years. I mean, if I wrote a book and said, look, this is fact, people say, no, it's fiction. We don't believe it, you know, but it's true. It's all true.
I totally agree. I'm not religious at all, but I find it really difficult to believe that there's not some sort of something. I can't articulate what it is. I love life and I love the world, and I'm happy to accept that if this is it, fine, we make the most of it, whatever. But I find it so hard to believe that there isn't something, because I think you're right with coincidences, is that some coincidences are just too mad to not be something more than just a coincidence. It's those moments where you're talking about something like that, exactly like that, you're talking about something that's so specific, and then something happens that is so intrinsically linked to it, that's not a coincidence. There's more to it than that. There is. Yeah, I totally agree. Not even talking about plants now, are we? Christ. I tell you what, next time, if you're at Chelsea, well, you're going to be at Chelsea next year, I'm going to find you and we're going to the pub after.
Yeah, we will. We'll have a beer. I'll be at Chelsea this year, but not, I think we're going to be there in some capacity. Yeah. There will be a small, it's next year, 2024, we're doing a show. Yeah. Oh, not this year, but we will be at Chelsea this year in some capacity.
Yeah. I will find you and we're going to the pub.
Because there will be a link to what we're going to be doing next year.
Amazing. Okay, so I think it's time for me to ask you some questions about your particular plants that you love, and a bit more about you, I suppose, and the plants that bring you back to your own garden, perhaps. So are you ready for these?
Yeah, go on then.
Go on, let's go for it. So first question is, if you were stuck on a desert island with only one other gardener, who would it be and why?
Oh, very good question.
Famous or otherwise, don't need to be famous necessarily.
Okay. I tell you what, the guy that I think I like to be stuck on a desert island with, famous for, is probably Clive West.
Nice.
Yeah, Clive West, because he's just got a fabulous aura about him.
Yeah, good choice.
Yeah, definitely.
Good choice. Nice. If you could never garden again, what would you spend your time doing instead?
If I could never garden again, what would I do? Oh, you got me going. If I could never garden again, I can't imagine never gardening.
I know, I'm sorry, it's cruel though, isn't it?
Oh dear, what would I do if I couldn't garden again? Oh, I don't want to say the obvious thing, like lying on a beach somewhere hot for the rest of my day, because that would be a bit crazy. Oh dear, if I could never garden again, what would I do? I'll tell you what I'd do, if I could never garden again, I'd watch All the Rings over and over again.
Oh, okay. God, didn't think you were going to say that.
And nor did I, but I mean, I had to think of something.
Keep you busy for a while, wasn't it?
I think it's a great book. I love the book. Again, I remember when I finished reading it, I cried. I was probably about 20, something like that. It took me 3 years to read the damn thing. Because, you know, I don't know if you've read it yourself.
Yeah.
You put it down and then for a couple of days, then you've got to pick it up again and back read.
Yeah.
to get some, because you'd have forgotten. It's so intricate and so complicated. You've got to keep, it's a book that keeps you on your toes. But
yeah,
I think one of the reasons, the reason I love it so much, I mean, I do love fantasy, and that book is all about nature.
Yeah.
And the pursuit of power, the underdog.
The
underdog comes through.
Yeah.
And slays the almighty one, shall we say.
Yeah. Let's go there. No spoilers here in case anyone's read it. Should have read it by now, though, shouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Mind you, I need 3 years to read it.
So. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Unless they can do that sort of fast reading.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's what you need for that. Okay. And the final question. Picture your garden for me. If you had to flee your garden right now, what one thing or plant would you take with you?
What one thing I would take with me? I would take my swole.
Oh.
You know what a swole is?
I do, yeah.
It looks like a golf club.
Wedge.
I think I'd take that. It's my favorite tool. And I think it also has sentimental value, because when Joe died, my mentor, her family said I could take an item of hers, go in a shed and take an item. And that's what I chose, the swole.
Amazing.
It's great because you can cut off weeds with the front stroke and the back stroke, and you can also give them a bit of a side swipe as well.
Yeah.
So it's a very agile little tool.
If you'd like to see more from Danny, then you can follow him on Instagram at The Black Gardener or on Twitter at The BLK Gardener. Or you can find out more on his website, theblackgardener.co.uk. Join me again next week, where I'll be in conversation with another fantastic planty guest in what will be the last episode of the current season of Guest Conversations. And we're going out with a really fantastic guest. Until then, you can follow me on Instagram at View From The Potting Bench to see what I'm up to in my garden, or visit viewfromthepottingbench.com to read my blog and much more.